Welcome to the reflection episode following the main episode called What on Earth is Purpose? Before we dive into practice, I want you to imagine something. Think of a topic you could talk about for hours. Something your friends come to you about because they know you'll have an answer worth hearing. Maybe it's sports, travel, technology, or French cuisine. I'm sure there's something. Now, how about doing a podcast about it? Sounds interesting? Okay, let me give you all the reasons why you shouldn't do it. Reason number one, it's exposing. Your thoughts, your ideas, and your voice will be heard by people who know you and others who don't. You have limited visibility on who sits in your audience. Sounds a bit scary, right? Number two, it's a whole lot of work. Developing the overall content, then each episode, the scripting, recording and editing, finding guests if you want conversations to be part of it. The third reason, you need to invest more than just time. Podcasting costs money, equipment, editing software, hosting fees. Number four, most certainly no one outside your network will listen in the beginning. It really takes time to grow. And reason number five, even if it grows and you build a real audience, the numbers rarely add up. Most podcasts never earn back what they cost to make. So, by every rational measure, don't do it. Now let me ask you, if that's the reality of return on investment, how come there are millions of podcasts out there and hundreds of thousands still publishing week after week? Are these highly irrational people who just want to broadcast themselves? Well, I would say when it comes to just putting yourself out there, there are many other opportunities that require far less effort. I guess I just did a pretty good job of talking you out of it, right? But maybe you're the listener who will say, I'll do it anyway. Every reason I gave you is real. I knew all of them before I recorded the first episode. Why did I still do it? Because I want the way we approach human work and lead people to change. And even if podcasting isn't for you, I'm sure there are things you give your time to. Things you may even do for others without getting paid for it. Most people seek work that goes beyond the transaction of time for pay. Especially in the era of knowledge workers, many say that meaningful work is a big part of where their personal sense of purpose comes from. Whether we find it at work depends just as much on the job itself as it depends on the person leading us. So today's first practice is to establish the line of sight that allows your team to find purpose in what they do. To achieve this, two acts have to come together. The first act is in your hands and called sense-giving. The second is in the hands of the people you lead, and you can only support it. Let's start with sense-giving. You can approach it with the following three steps. First, take one job inside your team and answer the following three questions. Why are we doing this? Who and what does this work serve? What's the impact on the business when it's done well and when it isn't? Then the second step is to have a conversation with the person doing the job. Let them answer the three questions as well, then put your answers next to theirs. Tell people why you're doing this before you ask. If it feels like a test, you'll get the answers they think you want, and you'll have learned nothing. This is meant to inform both of you. We rarely share the same picture of what a job is about and what it includes. That's why this kind of alignment isn't just a one and done, but continuous work. The third step is to put people in contact with those benefiting from their work. This can be a customer or a colleague. Of course, a direct conversation isn't always possible, but there's a substitute that works. If you can't put people in contact with the beneficiary of their work, expose them to the result. Customer feedback is just one example. I'm going to illustrate the first step for a recruiting coordinator role. The main job is the scheduling of all recruiting interviews. First question, why are we doing this? Because a recruiting process only moves as fast as its coordination. It requires multiple people to come together, so it needs to be coordinated. And good candidates don't wait. Second one, who and what does it serve? Candidates, recruiters, and managers. All of them served by a person doing this job well. Swift handling helps recruiters and managers do their part to bring in the best talent. And the third question, what's the impact on the business? The way it's being handled impacts how candidates perceive the company at the earliest stage of engagement. A well-coordinated process makes a positive first impression and keeps things moving fast. A slow process costs a company access to the best talent. Now, you can decide to manage such a team with KPIs only. How fast they respond to candidates, how many interviews they schedule a day. You can run the full numbers game on them. Or you build a connection between their responsibility, who and what their work serves, and the impact on the business. For people with the same responsibilities, it's tempting to do the answer mapping directly with the entire team. I would still recommend doing it in one-on-ones first. When you then expose the team to the beneficiaries of their work, in this case the recruiters and managers, and show them candidate feedback, it gives visibility to the value of their work. Now, as mentioned, there are two acts coming together. The second is not your responsibility. Sense-making sits with your team, but you can support it by knowing what people care about. What they make of it and how far they take it depends on the connection you build with them. Personal meaning is a strong driver of motivation. It looks different from one person to the next, and we often have more than one source. If money is the only thing drawing someone to a role, that's fragile, and it's worth knowing early. The risk is losing them to the next best offer. You can invest differently by knowing what else matters to the person in front of you. Here are five key sources that let people find personal meaning in their work. The first is service to customers. Many people truly enjoy seeing happy customers. The second is the team. Some thrive on being part of a group and contributing to its success. The third is the company mission. Those people strongly connect to why the business exists. The fourth is growth. They look for work that gives them the chance to develop. And the fifth is impact on society. It explains why a lot of people engage in social projects their companies run outside working hours. Knowing why a job matters is only one element. If the work doesn't touch what drives people personally, meaning alone won't carry them further than the paycheck does. People treat a job like a 9-to-5 when they don't see the value of their work, when they cannot find meaning in what they do, and when there's no connection to what they care about. You can do the whole work on sense-giving. Someone can have the full line of sight. But if they care most about being part of a great team and don't find this in yours, there'll always be a gap. Good leadership takes this into consideration. That's eventually what a leader can do on purpose. We cannot simply declare or hand it to people. Both acts have to come together. If you take one thing into the next week, take the first step with one person. One job, one conversation. Your answers to the three questions and theirs. Take it from there. As mentioned in the main episode, purpose and direction go hand in hand. So today's second practice is about how to give the kind of direction that actually guides people without standing over them. Let me give you the five key moves that I found most helpful. The first, agree together on what good outcomes look like. Be very clear about the outcome and the standard you're aiming for. Let people ask questions and even challenge you. Setting unrealistic targets is easy when no one doing the work is involved. This starts with what you accept. Targets set from above, and the easiest thing a manager can do is just passing them on. If a target is unrealistic, say so. Your alignment upwards is part of this move. Without it, there's no agreement. It's just passing on targets. If the outcome is clear and alignment in both directions is done, you can leave the how to your team. This is clarity on the destination and freedom on the path. The second move, name what's fixed and what's flexible. People need to know their responsibilities and where the boundaries are. We can only own the how if we know where our actions require alignment and where our responsibility stops. In most organizations, people overstep or let things drop simply because boundaries and responsibilities are unclear. The alignment often stops after onboarding, but organizations aren't static. Responsibilities shift just as much as boundaries change. A new hire can overstep as easily as someone who hasn't been updated. Spare yourself the problems by investing in clarity. Unclear responsibilities and boundaries don't just cause mistakes and friction. They also invite political behavior. The third move is about being available without circling above everyone like a helicopter. Make it easy for people to come to you when they're stuck without checking on them when they're not. Support when and where it's really necessary. Mistakes happen. Whether people can safely meet their limits while learning depends on how you balance support and challenge. Being available doesn't just mean that they can reach you. It means they know that you are actively supporting their development and it's safe to come to you with problems or mistakes. Which allows for the fourth move, matching your support to the person, noticing who needs more from you and who needs space. Giving everyone the same time isn't fairness. It's not paying attention to their needs and capabilities. You can only help people grow when you meet them where they stand. It's the part that requires time, a regular exchange on what's going well, where people struggle, and what helps them, not just a performance review once or twice a year. The fifth move is to protect your team's focus. Absorb the noise coming from the organization around you, the shifting priorities, the reporting demands, and the politics. Be transparent on what matters and distinguish information from noise. Distraction is all around us, and it can impact a team on various levels. Politics and power battles make people anxious and push them to pick sides. None of that supports collaboration or productivity. Transparency matters. In many companies, the lack of it may be the bigger issue. Still, not every business decision needs to be laid out to everyone. Separate the noise from what your team really needs. Take this into the next week by checking what's currently affecting your team's work the most. If people keep delivering something other than what you expected, start with move one and agree on what good looks like together. If people overstep or let things drop regularly, invest in move two. Clarify responsibilities and boundaries. Is your calendar so blocked that people can barely reach you? Choose move number three and make space. Leadership requires time with your team. If some people are thriving while others are stuck and everyone gets the same amount of time with you, that's move number four. Check who really needs your support and how much of it. It's rarely an equal distribution once you focus on capabilities and needs. Move number five could be your starting point if you find yourself in more discussions about the current business strategy, rumors about layoffs or new working policies than the actual work. If more than one of those sounds familiar, take the one with the loudest symptom. When we invest in guiding people, we don't have to spend time on controlling them. Micromanagement is a sign of not having done this work. These are day-to-day practices, and they need focus depending on what your team needs most. Let me briefly summarize the practices. Give people the visibility of how their work connects to the business by showing them who and what it serves and translating what impact it has when it's done well. Invest time into the sense-giving and support their sense-making by understanding what matters to them. Give direction through guidance, not numbers. Agree together on what good looks like and leave the how to them. Name what's fixed and what's flexible and lay out the responsibilities and boundaries for each role. Be available without being controlling. Match your support to the person and their capabilities. Protect people's focus and separate noise from necessary information. That's leadership work. It requires more than handing out targets. It asks you to know your people and what their work is for. It's the kind of work that no management system can do for you. And it makes the difference between a team that simply executes and a team that understands why their work matters. If you consider this helpful, let me know. Tell me what you experience when you invest more in this. Connect with me on LinkedIn and share the podcast with others. In the next main episode, we'll dive into the leadership work that truly shapes company cultures. You may already guess that it's not about putting value statements on walls. Stay curious, stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in to the New Work Playbook, where work gets better because people matter.